This episode is brought to you by Summer School Electronics. With pedals like the Snow Day Delay, the Pep Rally Fuzz, the Trash Panda, and my personal favorite, the Science Fair, which is two classic dirt pedals in one with a mid-boosted overdrive on one side, a black lab rat circuit on the other, and a blend knob to blend between them to find the perfect classic stacked dirt sound you're looking for, it's hard not to find something you'll love. Mark builds all of his pedals by hand in Syracuse, New York, where he also works as a full-time educator. In addition to the super fun graphics on their pedals, Mark also offers custom artwork. Want your dog's face on a pedal? He can do it. Want your face on a pedal? He can make that happen too. Go over to summerschoolelectronics.com and make sure to tell them that 40 Watt Podcast sent you. All right, y'all. Philip here, 40 Watt Podcast, episode 15. Never said I'd make it, made it. 15. I don't know what's significant there. I'm making crap up. Anyway, so got my buddy Clifton on here today. Y'all will see, I've already seen it in the title. Going to be a little different today. Normally, I interview folks and talk to them about the music they're making, the songs they're writing, that kind of thing. Today, I messaged Clifton and I said, we need to talk about
Pedals the Musical.
I don't know. It's like, so to give some backstory, because I know for a fact that I have some listeners who have not watched this. So I need you to do me a favor. Look in the comments below. There's a link to JHS Pedals on YouTube and a video called Pedals the Musical. It's a half hour of your life that you may or may not wish you could get back. But go watch it, because if you don't, everything we're about to talk about is going to be completely out of context. You're not going to understand. So, having said that, pause this and go watch it. So, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't, it's not my fault. I told you might not. So, Clifton, you watched this yesterday.
Yes.
And I watched it. I watched the second performance live. I didn't watch the first one because I was playing at a youth camp where the reception was so bad, if it could be negative, it would have been. Like, if they're coming away from my phone to revert to a flip phone, it might have. So,
well, you said that was in Forest, right?
Yeah.
Well, my grandmother lives out there, and I never have reception there, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Wait, anytime I needed to use my phone, I had to drive into town to the Dollar General and sit in the parking lot. Not because they had Wi-Fi, but that was the first place I got bars of reception that I could use it.
Yeah.
We were still like 5 miles away from that. So it was middle of nowhere. It was a great camp. It was fun. It was nice to play guitar with a band again and like play with people. First gig with the Novo since I got it. It was great. Had a blast playing some music. But so on Saturday, the first one went live, and then on Sunday, the second live performance happened. So what'd you think?
Man, to be honest, okay. So I watched like 3 minutes of it, and then I paused it, and I was like, I was thinking like, well, my wife, she's watched some of these live streams that Josh does and gets a kick out of them. I was like, this is almost comical enough that, you know, she's a non-musician that she might actually get a kick out of this. And the whole time, like, we were just kind of like looking at each other like, this is, I get the intent of it, but it reminded me, and I'm not trying to say this to be critical. It was almost like a pseudo, like a deep fake of like a junior college type theatrical production. And I'm not knocking. The people who acted were just great. They did great. Good singing. The band, hey, Rhett Scholl was like the band leader. That was a cool little thing. And, you know, they told a story. But, you know, I think it's interesting that you can that first of all, this the subject matter is like the most like nerdiest like thing you can cover. I mean, it's such a niche thing that I don't know that anybody who, you know, is a guitar player would get it, get the intent of it. And so, but I mean, it's playing into that. And he's trying to tell a story. I think I get a kick out of, you know, it's like the guy was wearing the beanie, but like wearing a suit. And it's like 1950 something, you know.
Yeah. Nick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So on that front, so let's talk about this for a minute, because I've got some criticism and some praise. So I'm going to walk the line here. Not that Josh Scott will ever hear this, ever see this. Not that Jill Scott will ever see this, ever hear this. Tupelo represent from Mississippi, his wife. And she, you know, she wrote it. This is what she does. She has a degree in theater. She writes plays. That this is her bag. This is her profession. And she's very good at it. I have played in the pit for community theaters. I've played for other for stuff at Delta State. I've done junior college theater. So,
yeah.
This was a little closer to high school in a little bit. In a few ways. And that's not a slight. That is, they put this together in 2 months. They wrote, composed, rehearsed, and performed a live musical performance in 2 months. And it's, you're right, it is the deepest, most inside ever meta conversation about guitar pedals.
Yeah.
No one's watching this who doesn't care about guitar pedals, period. Granted, like, what was it, 28,000 people, something like that, watched it? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Nuts. But, and the music was great. The songs were campy. It's a musical. Songs are campy. Ultimately, though, I remember watching it and getting near the end and thinking, if we weren't in the middle of a pandemic, this would have never happened.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, you know, this is a byproduct of what a crazy year it's been, yep. I think. And, you know, I can't remember. Did he have like a little thing at the end where he said, hey, this was an opportunity for these people to get paid and get paid well. And Sweetwater had, you know, funded this, helped fund this thing. And so you have to applaud that. And when I say, you know, it, when you talk about like, I guess the entertainment value or how good, or that's all subjective. Absolutely. Because I think the people were great. I think, you know, the choreography was great. If you're trying to be, you know, objective about it, it was just the subject matter was such a deep dive.
Yes.
That I just don't see that, like, it would relate to people outside of, you know, our niche world.
I agree. I just don't. It was funny. I won't say it wasn't entertaining. Some people said it was kind of hard to watch. I can totally see that as well. Yeah. I also challenged some of those people who said it was hard. So here's the caveat. Here's where we're going to take this in a slightly different direction. While I do think it felt low budget because it was, and it felt campy because it was entertaining despite all of that, which was the point. Some of the folks who are a little harder on it, the hard to watch crowd or the whatever, I almost guarantee, almost, because I don't like absolutes, but almost guarantee most of them don't watch a lot of musical theater. Yeah. I'm willing to bet that most of them, their exposure to musical theater was the movie version of Phantom of the Opera or the movie version of Les Mis, or you know what I mean? Yeah. They haven't played or taken part in musical theater in a while, community theater, even state theater, university theater. People don't sing Pitch Perfect live in theater. Mm-mm. It doesn't happen. Nothing. Things aren't perfect. Lines aren't delivered perfectly. I promise that maybe those that did it on Broadway, but the off Broadway production of Rent didn't sound like the movie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. You know, you just go to your, you know, I don't know if everywhere has local community colleges, but, you know, once the pandemic's over, go check out one of those. And, you know, it's kind of like in that caliber. I mean, there's a lot of talent there and up and coming talent, and people are, you know, stretching those muscles, whatever. And I think it was kind of on par with what you expect out of that. I'll say this. Maybe I'll save this for later. So go ahead.
Oh, no, I absolutely agree. You know, and they have fun doing it. And, you know, they get to, I've been in some musical theater. I've been really pitchy in some musical theater. I've had bad nights in musical theater. Not saying they had bad nights, but that's the very nature of live theater performance.
Mm-hmm.
There's hiccups on the second night, which you can't see now because they, if you don't know, y'all, they edited the two nights together to get the version that's on YouTube now.
Okay.
They chose the best performances out of the ones that had happened, because when I watched it live, I don't remember which Petals song it was, but the YouTube feed lost all audio for an entire song. There was no audio.
I see. Okay. I think I remember hearing about that where they pulled it off the internet.
Yeah, so they did the live performance on Saturday, and then when it was over, they pulled it down. You could not watch it later. And then on Sunday night, they pulled it down. And then I think the next day or the day after, they had them patched together
for
the version that's now available.
Well, that's perfectly understandable.
100%. I mean, they overdub on Austin City Limits. I'm not going to fault Josh Scott for patching together a live musical performance, you know?
Absolutely.
But having said that, it's the nature of musical theater. It's fun. It's enjoyable. You have a blast. You don't go to take it seriously. If you want serious, go watch Shakespeare. You know, this is fun. It's very meta. It's very, very only guitar players are going to like it. They're doing more. Like, they're going to, apparently. So I watched, I listened to Rhett Scholl and Zach Broyles' podcast Dipped in Tone, and so Rhett talked about it, and Rhett talked about, you know, he's talked about how difficult being in a musical was. He didn't realize how hard that was on one of the other podcasts, and it's hard being on and paying attention for 2.5 hours and being that focused, and having he was the musical director for that, but it's hard having a musical director yell at you in the middle of playing, and you're like anyway. But they said they're going to do a 70s. They're going to do an 80s. They're going to do a 90s. I don't know if he spoke out of turn or anything, but that's what he says. So,
yeah. Well, that's where I was going to go with before I said hold that thought. I think that this is great because I think it shows there's an interest in this type of thing, and there's more. I think the sky's the limit on where some of this could go. I mean, you know, whether or not he makes, you know, 3 or 4 more of these musicals or whatever based on subject matter from decade to decade, that's irrelevant. I think that it's something that shows that something so niche is becoming so mainstream, and that it's so accessible. And, you know, there was a lot of NAMM culture-ish, I mean, our musical communities, like, things in that, I mean, I think it's a good thing because it's bringing that to the next level of exposure. And it's going to, I think it's going to pave the way for more interesting things. And, you know, we know that the Petal movie's right around the corner.
So I'm glad you brought that up. And y'all, I promise I didn't coach Clifton into this. I really wanted to talk about how mainstream pedal culture is starting to become. Like, it's, there are more and more I'm seeing on Facebook groups, which are basically forums. I don't, does anyone actually go to forums? I guess the gear page still exists. I never go over there. I went over there recently because Ryan Burke said he was trolling folks over there. So I went to see that. You know, I wanted
he
to
would,
see
wouldn't he?
Yeah. So I wanted to see the dumpster fire. But yeah, so over the whole Jazzmaster. Oh, we should talk about the Fender Jazzmaster thing. Oh, I just thought about that. We're going to talk about that in a second. So yes. The Acoustasonic Jazzmaster. So I see in groups all the time, people are like, oh, I've been playing guitar for 15 years. I'm just now finding out or getting into guitar pedals. I want to know what rock you've been under. I had pedals in the first year of playing guitar because that's what I felt like I did. Actually, to be honest, I was in this really bad rock band and the bassist looked at me and said, I need you to buy a distortion pedal because your tone is killing me. he could not. I was playing clean. I was playing a Jackson, former Series 2 Floyd Rose SSH into a solid state Yamaha amp with no overdrive. It was awful. So yeah, I bought an overdrive pedal, and from there it became what it is. But now, like, there's a musical. There's about to be a movie, a documentary style movie. So my wife. She heard me listening to Pedals and Musical. I did not make her watch it. And so after I came out of the studio and I'd been listening to it, she said, what the hell were you listening to? I said, it's Pedals, the musical. She's like, oh my gosh. And so when we got ready to record tonight, I told her, oh, they announced the pedal movie's coming out. She went, oh no. I said, no. The documentary, it's not like what you're thinking.
Comedy, right.
Exactly. She's like, okay, documentary I can deal with. So,
yeah.
But it's becoming this mainstream normal thing to talk about guitar pedals and guitar effects. And like, a few episodes ago, I had Alice Hasen, who's a violinist. She's got a full pedal board for violin. And it's like the pedal world has become this big, big thing that it's not even just guitar players anymore.
We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported in part by Stringjoy Strings. I'm a snob, at least that's what people tell me. I'm never okay with good enough, and that's where Stringjoy Strings come in. They're better than good enough. They're the best. Stringjoy are making some of the finest strings available today right up the road from me in Nashville, Tennessee. They offer custom sets, balanced tension, coated strings, the works. If you need it, they can probably make it happen. You should be using Stringjoy Strings, and if you're going to order from them, you really could help this podcast out by clicking the affiliate link down in the description or show notes below. You get amazing strings, I get a little bit of that back to help the show keep going. It's a win-win situation. Get your Stringjoy Strings today.
Yeah, it's a thing, and I mean, it even... from the time, like, I've been paying close attention to all of this, it's gone to this like whole other level. It's matured, you know, to something that you're starting to see these guys, you know, who are, you know, our age, who've been whittling away like 20 years doing this stuff, who are like starting to be successful now. And starting to make waves in the whole industry. And I just think that's amazing because I can tell you the one thing that after my first couple of NAMMs that just blew me away was these guys were like legit on the cutting edge of like being so, there's so much creativity going on. And I know that's in other industries too. Yeah. But like these guys, it's a special place because they're making their dreams come true. They're taking something relatively small and can be done as a hobbyist and turning it into a living. And they're creative. They're paving the way for the future in music.
And we
really think about it.
Gals as well. There's a big movement of women in the industry who are finally
yes, yeah. And I didn't mean to say that guys like
I know, but yeah. I like to point that out because this was a total men's club for a long time.
Yeah.
People forget Mary Ford played guitar because Les Paul. You know what I mean? You're seeing, it's crazy. You're seeing more and more women as builders, more and more women as influencers, more. And so I actually think a lot of that growth of women, people of color, I think that growth is part of what's drawing, instead of drawing people to it, I think finally the industry is being drawn to people, and it's opening up in a way that brings more people in. And that's why it's more mainstream. It's becoming more inclusive for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
be a part of it.
Yeah. It was like, I started to notice like there's a wave of that right behind that other wave I was talking about.
Yeah.
And that was about 2 or 3 years ago. I started to really notice, I think the last Winter NAMM I went to, like almost every booth had like these up and coming female artists, you know, from like Yvette Young.
Yeah.
She's there was many, 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 but you know, like that's cool because like I could go home and I'll be watching Hulu or whatever, and there'd be an ad that butts in with her like playing like ukulele, We Are Young, whatever. And like my kids are exposed to that, and like they know who that is, and then start, you know, you can look up her, and kind of that's a gateway into this whole, before things become mainstream, there's so much crossover, right?
Yep.
And we're seeing all that crossover take place, and I mean, I know music is mainstream anyways, it's pop music, but like this whole kind of creative, all these boutique things, one day they're not going to be really boutique anymore, they're going to be mainstream.
Yeah. And it's sort of like I look at guys like and I do mean guys this time, people like Josh Scott. Let's talk about Josh Scott. Who was a boutique maker for a long time. I've told the story on here before. I bought one of his JHS modded pedals out of Fondren Guitars in Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah.
And sold it because I didn't know that it would be JHS pedals would be what they are.
Yeah.
But they were boutique. I would not call JHS pedals boutique anymore.
They're mass produced. However, you know, I think they're a little different than like, you know, Boss or TC Electronic or something like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They're different. They're in a different class. Yeah. But they're not boutique either. Yeah. They're like that mid-major, not, you know, a dude in his garage kind of boutique.
Yeah.
They're not Paul Cochran boutique before he started working with MXR. But we see, so there's that growth and there's that creativity. I think that inside stuff that, like you said, music has always been mainstream, but like people know the person who sang the song. Musicians know the people that played the song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like musicians or regular people know, I guess this is a bad example, but it's an example most people will relate to. The average person knows Michael Jackson sang Beat It. Musicians know Van Halen played the guitar solo on Beat It, or that Steve Lukather played the rhythm guitar parts on Beat It. You know what I mean? That's the difference. And so it's therefore these musicians that know the gear and the inside and all the makers and all these different folks who are making all this stuff. And it's becoming more known who the makers are outside of some of those circles. That's what's
right. Right. That
weird knowledge.
I liken this to like, you know, my grandfather like wasn't like a big musician or anything. So it has nothing to do with being a musician. He was super into cars. Okay. And he would light up when he started talking about how in the 1940s after World War II, you know, there's these guys out in California, and he would name them, you know, that started tinkering around, you know, doing these races, these drag drag strip races and, you know, how he had gotten into it. And, you know, at one time had his own car and his eyes would twinkle. And there's this whole culture that was wrapped around it. And it was his, all his friendships and what he did on the weekends. And like, I liken some of this, what you and I are doing right now,
yeah,
to there's going to be this whole culture that is going to mature and it might, you know, it might die out one day where it's not popular and something else will take its place. But like, they're going to have all these stories and these friendships and all this folklore that goes around, and some of it's going to be legendary, you know, like what maybe this Josh Scott's going to be held
to, musical.
Yeah. Ooh, as legendary. as the orator of telling the story of all. So, I mean, I'm sure when I'm 70, 80 years old, I will sit there with a twinkle in my eye telling my grandkids about all the fun I had in my, you know, 30s.
Right.
In this culture. So I think it's good. I mean, it's part of our lives, and you know, it's a niche thing, but I'm just happy to see all like something that I care about deeply and invested in starting to, I can explain it to those around me who don't understand it. And it's like, it's becoming, I'm not just some like elf into some weird thing. Like, it's being understood.
Yeah. So. It's not some weird, you know, it's not trying to explain to your boomer parents that you know, play World of Warcraft online with a bunch of friends across the world and they just don't understand. And it's like, what do you mean? It's boomers, probably bad. That's probably even older before they'd really understand that. But, where it's like, you know, I got into this and I mentioned my wife earlier. She has no interest in guitar pedals. She has played a guitar. She picked it up really quickly, like picked it up, could play a song in a couple of days. And then it was just like, not my thing. Put it down. And I was like, I hate you so much. Like, it took me weeks to get to the point she got to in like a day. And I was like, I hate so much right now. But she got really interested in like pedals, and she's like, okay, what does this one do that this one doesn't? Like, well, what's the difference here? And like, got to talking about different overdrive circuits and different types of delay, and she was actually interested in it. Does she want to seek it out on her own and find out more information? No.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting conversation to be had. And I even look at it this way. So we had that conversation last time, how I wasn't really into pedals for a long, long time. And that's because no one around me was into pedals. Like, a buddy of mine had a Rat, mm-hmm. and that's what he had. He didn't go seeking other overdrives or distortions or fuzzes. He had a Rat.
Right, you make it work.
Exactly, you make it work. A guy that I used to play some with, he had a Wah and a Tube Screamer, and that's what he had. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He didn't go looking for other sounds. You just had what you had and you made it work. You didn't talk about it. You didn't care that much about it. You just played guitar. You didn't
play
pedals is the phrase I guess people are using sometimes now. But now look how easy it is to find someone just to chat about guitar gear and pedals.
Well, like, I can tell you the reason one of the things when I realized how massive of a reach this was, even outside of like people I know and my friends, is right after I'd started the podcast, we were down at Disney World, like with my family on a vacation. And there was some dude in front of me who was wearing like a Chase Bliss t-shirt, you know, and I was like, this has hit critical mass. Like, and I started like, I started trying to talk to the dude and he was kind of like, what are you talking about? It's like your shirt, you know, like got Chase Bliss, you're a guitar player. Oh yeah. 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 And it's like, I think he was taken off guard that like somebody even knew what that was.
Yeah. I remember when I discovered Chase, not to get really far down that rabbit hole, I started to see the pictures popping up on Facebook of people's rigs and like so many knobs. So I mean, like, I remember distinctly, I don't remember whose pedal board it was, but they had like 7 Chase Bliss pedals on it and there were so many knobs. And I was so confused because I had not re-entered the pedal world. I was in that I have what I have and, you know, I make it work. Mm-hmm. Phase mm-hmm. still. I was like, what is going on? And the rabbit hole just gets deep from there. But yeah, you run into people, even non-musicians just wearing the t-shirts, you know? I've got a buddy of mine that's primarily a drummer and a keys player who just has gotten like into pedals, like, and he plays some guitar. He's been playing a little bit in a Red Dirt band, but so he bought a couple of guitars and he's getting into pedals now. And I'm like, it took him that long to get into pedals and to start to really dig in and see what they're about.
Yeah.
And it's a weird culture. It's a weird thing. And I know we're even being a little niche about a niche, because the pedals is just part of the whole gear circle.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember like my first and I kind of like came from the same background where, you know, I had these utility pedals or was exposed to that. And I remember like I went to Eastside Music in Nashville at an after party at like the first NAMM I went to. I felt like I'm over talking NAMM here.
Oh, it's all good.
But
that too in a second.
Anyways, they had Old Blood Noise was throwing this after party there. And, you know, you're thinking, okay, I'm going to meet and hang out with people. No, this was like they had a party where they had like some artist of theirs. He was in the store. And this is a tiny little store in East Nashville. Yeah. And, they're videoing this guy, like making all these weird, trippy noises with their pedals. And it was all ambient stuff. And people were just intently like it was almost like a concert. And just obsessing over it. And I was like, see, this is like, I didn't even know this culture existed, you know, but like yeah. People were so nerding out over people twisting knobs and making these obscure sounds. And I just realized that it's the tip of the spear here. I mean, there's so much more behind it that we just don't even realize.
See, and for me getting back into it, you know, at the age of like, what was I when I first started diving back in, 36, 37, I'm 40 mm-hmm. now, turned 40 in December. And I remember, I'm trying to remember exactly what was happening. I was getting some new gigs I had not gigged in a while. And so I was getting stagnant and bored. And so I was like, okay, let's change the pedal board up. Let's do something. And so I started looking. I was like, oh, I really, really want to get back into, it was probably Univibe. It's almost always Univibe. I tried to find the right Univibe. And I was like, okay, let's go online. Let's see what's up. And that was about the time also that my name came up on the King of Tone list the first time, because I'd gotten on the list and forgotten that I'd gotten on the list. And then I got the email. Actually, I'd been on it once before. My name had come up and I had not bought the pedal. So there's still that floating entry. According to Mike, you can still go back and claim that entry. I don't know where that email is. It's not worth it. Mm-hmm. But so I started surfing YouTube. Like I didn't do YouTube. That wasn't a thing. I mean, it existed. Obviously, there were people doing it. But I started searching for different Univibe pedals. And I think I stumbled across That Pedal Show.
Okay.
And I started watching that. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then I watched them again. And I watched another episode. I was like, wait, this is a thing. This is like a whole thing. Yeah. This whole YouTube series, which I was still calling a series, not a show at that point, but it's a show, is all about guitar pedals. And then from there, I discovered 60 Cycle Hum, you know, Steve and Ryan. I was like, oh, okay, here's a whole other thing. And then through them, I discovered, you know, XYZ, Stepping Stone. Then I discovered their podcasts about gear. And I was like, oh, well, let's start listening to those. Started listening to, like, Blake with the Tone Mob. And I started listening to Brian Wampler's podcast, Chasing Tone.
Right, right.
And that's when it hit. It was like, I'm not the lone weirdo out here obsessing over all of this stuff. And then the world exploded for me, because that world already existed in 2017. I just
had to
discover it. And it was nuts. That was my discovery, just straight through YouTube. And now here I am recording a podcast where, granted, I do try to focus on the music and the songwriting, but occasionally I've got to just nerd out for an episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you there. Like my show was never intended to be about gear heavy or whatever. And I was going to get artists and tell stories. And that lasted for a little while until I started going to NAMM. I was like, there is so much culture here. And so many people to meet and interesting, and just sent me on this journey. I was like, man, I'm going to run down all these people that I met, you know, and talk to them. And you know, it's interesting, like 4 years later now, that see where these people have gone in their, you know, in their endeavors. It's just amazing. So, you know, going back to the pedal musical thing, this is a high watermark. Hopefully, you know, they say, was it rising tides raise all ships?
Yep.
I hope it does that for all the, you know, all these people, because they've been working so hard. Some will get notoriety, some won't. But yeah, that's fine.
That's the nature of things. And you're right. So just to sort of put a bow on the whole JHS, the musical thing, as we bounce sort of back to it a little bit, mm-hmm. is that it was campy. It was corny. It was 100% meant to be. If you've ever watched a Josh Scott video, you know that that was par for the course.
Yes.
It was exactly what he meant for it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So if it wasn't your thing, it's not your thing, and that's okay.
Yeah, I think I told you, like, it and Josh Scott's humor reminds me a little bit like that along the Jim Henson, that kind of type of comedy. And it very much had like a Muppet show, like a Muppet variety show.
Yeah, it
feel
did.
To it.
It really did. Oh, my gosh, it did. So speaking of if it's not for you, that's okay. Let's talk about the Acoustasonic Jazzmaster. So for those of you that don't know, that are listening, and I know there's a few of you, I've discovered I have a few listeners who aren't even musicians, which is interesting to me. Acoustasonic Jazzmaster, Fender made this series back in the early 2000s called Acoustasonics. Teleacoustic and the Stratacoustic. They were god awful. They were terrible. They were bad plywood tops on a plastic, like ABS plastic back. They're awful. They were terrible. They sounded terrible. They looked terrible. Everything was terrible. Anyway, I digress. They've tried to reimagine that series now. And they, last year or 2 years ago, whatever, they put out the Telecaster version of the Acoustasonic and the Stratocaster version of the Acoustasonic. And now they've got a Jazzmaster version of the Acoustasonic. I have played the Strat and the Telecaster. I've not played the Jazzmaster. And I am going to, first of all, go on record. I hate them. I hate them so much. They put acoustic strings on them. They don't sound like electrics. They don't really sound like good acoustics. To me, they don't fit what I need. I have, it's this shoulder. This is weird. I have electric guitars. I have acoustic guitars. I keep them separate. I don't need them. That guitar is not for me, and I hate it. But you know what? It's the perfect guitar for somebody.
Yeah.
There's an audience out there for that guitar. I'm picturing the front guy of a bar band or a cover band or even an original band that has acoustic guitar, but also occasionally has electric rhythm guitar that he plays.
Yeah.
And he's got one guitar. That's perfect for that guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Your typical guitar slinger is not going to play this guitar as the lead guitar player in a band.
No, I think it's a very niche, again, I'll use that word niche, but it's a very niche type guitar. I've tried them. I haven't tried the Jazzmaster yet. I'm not to that level of, you know, anybody's sending me, you know, Fender Jazzmaster.
Look, if they're not sending Brett Scholl one, which they didn't, they're definitely not sending one to me.
No. But I, you know, I've enjoyed playing the other two, the Strat and the Tele. And I think that chambered thing, if you actually play one acoustically, mm-hmm. it does have an acoustic tone to it that is, it's not very loud, but it's pleasing. There's some big differences in that, and like, you know, going and picking up my favorite acoustic electric to play at church. Yeah. And for me, I feel like it's aesthetically so kind of out there that I would get weird looks in the context I play.
Yeah, I could see that.
But if I was playing, you know, like Jimmy Buffett tunes, you know, and at a place on the beach, and I had a band, and you know, I only want to bring it one guitar, I think it'd be a great choice.
So mentioning that, I'm gonna add on to that. Then here is my biggest problem with that. With that whole line of guitars. Again, I don't like them. They're not for me. I am not the audience for those guitars. I like classic Fender Gibson style guitar, electric guitars. Yeah. I like Gibson and Martin style acoustic guitars. I play a Larrabee, not a Martin, but the same basic style. I won't even take my Helix to a blues gig because I don't want to deal with the looks I would get. Like if I'm playing a blues yep. gig or an Americana gig, I'm not taking my Helix rig. I'm taking my pedals and my amp because mm-hmm. that's the aesthetic. I'm an aesthetic person. I've said this before. That guitar is not my aesthetic. Now, here's my other thing for those people that it is their thing. I think they're overpriced by about $800.
We'll be right back. If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
It's a big leap because you can get there's lots of other choices at $2,000.
Absolutely.
You could buy a nice Telecaster and a nice acoustic electric and swap both out. So I mean, it's for a specific type of person. You know, is it Charlie? Is it Worsham or Wortham?
Yeah, Charlie Worsham.
Worsham. I've seen some videos of him playing it, or one of the acoustic songs. Yeah. I don't know which one. And, you know, he's putting it to like a really interesting use, and he'll like loop and then switch over to the electric, you know, and he's doing cool things with it. So, I mean, I think it serves a purpose for a certain type of musician who needs sure. that kind of thing. I like it. I've had a hard time justifying putting that much of my budget towards that thing.
Yeah, it seems like, so at $2,000, which is how much they are, feels like an awful lot of money to put towards a guitar that's not really an electric guitar and gets electric-like tones. Mm-hmm. Or just honestly an okay-sounding acoustic electric tone. You know what I mean? In the same vein, like, for like the Charlie Worsham style thing, or for those that do that kind of looping, I think that's awesome. I think you can get as good a result using a decent semi-hollow guitar, because obviously you got to be able to do some tapping and some knocking. Semi-hollow guitar, and this is going to sound ridiculous, the acoustic simulator from Boss. I think you can do almost as good a job.
Yeah, I don't know about the electronics in these, but if I was actually looking for that type of tool myself, I would probably look at the Taylor, what they did about 6-7 years ago, that T5. They're probably, you're going to pick them up for a lot less than that because they're used and they weren't like a huge success.
Yeah, no, they weren't.
But aesthetically, I could pull that off in the situation where I'm at.
I think they look fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they weren't my guitar either. I've played a few of those. I don't have a problem with the way they play. Once again, it's where you end up in that middle ground of not really an electric, not really an acoustic, trying to do both and doing neither like outstandingly.
Yeah.
That's where I end up. But that's me. But my biggest thing, people are pissed. Like, people are angry. I feel like I've already ranted about this type of topic when I ranted about people buying and flipping limited edition pedals just for the sake of buying and flipping them. It's like, what is wrong with you people? It's a guitar. This does not define your life. This does not define your existence. If it's not for you, it's not for you. Scroll harder and get over it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I use this for something else that I'm not going to mention. I'll mention it off air, off podcast for you. But it was a totally different topic. But I said, you got to make like Elsa and just let it go. You really just got to let it go. Yeah. It's not that big a deal. It's a guitar.
Well, like even at NAMM, when I played like they came out with the Telecaster one this year. Or the Strat one. Last man that. Anyways, I was trying whichever one there was, the new one. And I even had people who were like in the industry, like who own companies, who were commenting on my Instagram thing, like negatively kind of dogging this guitar. And I was like, it's not a good look, guys.
Not a good look at all. Come on. And that's one of the things it's one of the things I love about this industry, this community, this group of people. For the most part, I came into this late. I decided to start elbowing my way in. I wanted to be a part of it. I wanted to talk gear. I wanted to be a part of this whole community. For the most part, I haven't had to elbow anybody. I haven't had to do anything. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, come on. I'll show you this. Tell you this. Let's talk about this. No problem. So it's been such a welcoming, the gear world is mostly a welcoming community, but these folks who get so bent out of shape, even those that own companies and decide they want to get bent out of shape, it's like, come on, y'all are ruining it. Y'all are messing this up.
Mm-hmm.
There's room for all of us here.
Yeah. Yeah. I've learned my lesson the hard way about dogging something that's precious to somebody else. So I don't do that anymore. Like I'm kind of like, if you enjoy that, man, great. You know, that's fine. I don't care.
Yeah. It's not, if it's not for you, that's okay. It's like saying that guitar is not my thing. And yes, I use the word hate because I genuinely hate playing them. I don't like it, but that doesn't mean somebody else can't love it. I hate certain guitar sounds, but there are some guitar players making a living playing with those guitar sounds, and it's right for what they're doing. Yeah. I strongly dislike or hate lots of things that are doing very, very well, and obviously I'm in the minority on it, and that's okay, because this is my taste. It's what I like, but I don't hate somebody for liking it. I don't hate somebody for playing it. I don't hate the company for putting it out. Yeah. Come on. I mean, Fender, stepping out there. I sort of think they might have been better off not going with the Acoustasonic name and naming it something else entirely.
I think that's where a lot of the backlash is people think about that plasticky looking laminate body, like that had acoustic strings and a piezo pickup in it. Mm-hmm. With maybe like a Telecaster neck pickup or something in it. I mean, I saw all kind of reiterations of that in the 90s. Like Carvin was making one.
I saw one of those today on Craigslist. Really? Somebody was selling one.
Snatch that up.
No, I don't know. I'm not going near it. But yeah, it was like a lot of people trying to do that, and I get it, and it's just. And I also get acoustic guitar. It's hard to get a good acoustic guitar sound live. Yeah. I've got my Larravee. I cut into it and put the Anthem system in it from LR Bags. And I was like,
yeah,
it was the most nerve-wracking thing I've ever done. And actually, I'm going to have to do the same thing to my Gibson. It's a J15. It's not like a precious J45 or anything. It's a
low budget Gibson, but the Paizo that's in it right now is terrible. It sounds so bad.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that Paizo sound, and I think that's where like a lot of the purists have attacked that sound. It's kind of the sound that they have is kind of like they're using a Paizo, but like then they're doing like putting like that modeling, like that almost like that's what I can describe is like Boss had like that Cosm modeling where it would like sound like a slope shoulder or a dreadnought or whatever, and that's kind of what I think internally is going on in this guitar. And it's not bad sounding, but there's just a certain like timbre or like quality from that type of pickup system that you're not going to get that beautiful sound that I think a purist who's like using a trying to get the best that they can out of like a LR Bags Anthem.
Exactly. It's a totally different thing. It's mm-hmm. And man, I got PTSD talking about Cosm. I had one of those like the Boss BR8 like home recorder that recorded.
Yes, I had one of those too.
100 meg drive like kind of thing, and it had the Cosm in there. I was like, oh, this is so bad. Of course, I didn't even know how to use it either. There are some people that make them sound great. I don't know what kind of witchcraft they're using to make it happen, but they get it to work.
Well, there was a period of time, this is embarrassing, but about a little over 11 years ago when I started, working at a church, I didn't have nice gear, and I had like leftover from my college days, like, Takamine, with that nasty sounding Paizo in it. And that's what I did to soften that down is I hooked it into that little home recorder and ran out into the sound system with that acoustic modeling thing.
Yeah.
And got good enough to get me by until I could start upgrading.
Yeah.
And so, I'm not going to knock it. It got me through a little season where I needed something.
There's a place for it all. I mean, I see people going back to those old, the old Zoom like 505s or whatever. Some people going back to those things, and I'm like, really, really? Like that was so bad then, but it's amazing what 10, 15, 20 years of nostalgia will do to you, where you look back on something that was awful and then pretend it's good.
I'm just waiting for like the next like Jack White type of guitarist, but like who's Gen Z or whatever to come along and use some of that, like that degraded sound, and everybody's going to rush to go get one. I'm still holding on to my Digitech for that very reason.
Oh, dude, I wish. So I had the Digitech one, the modulation station, whichever one. That
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think it was the blue one, the treadle and the knob to select them. Mm-hmm. And I hated that thing. I remember I think I bought it in a pawn shop and I sold it on a forum at some point. And now I wish I had it back. Like now I'm like, oh, I bet it sounds great. And I just didn't know what I was doing.
Kind of thing. Yeah. That's a whole nother topic. And I know we're probably going to, stay on topic. But I would encourage anybody, if you got any old gear laying around like that, plug it up. Now that you like, if you're a guitarist who's matured in your playing, go play it and see if there's any magic in it.
Yep.
Because I'm telling you, because I've done this from experience, there are things that you overlooked and there are things that you wrote off because of bad technique or not having an ear for it or not knowing how to dial in the parameters. Because I'm going to tell you, some of those effects, they gave way too wide of a parameter where you could really get into trouble.
Usable range was like this, but you could go like here.
Yes.
Like, it's like you had five or six past the usable range.
Yeah. Got to have all those options.
Yeah.
No. And if you have an ear for it and you've played with enough effects, you can get some usable tons out of some of that stuff if you know what you're doing. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't chasing rabbits here.
No, that's okay, because I've actually been thinking about buying one of those old Line 6 pod beans recently and revisiting. Yeah.
I was tempted a few months back. I was thinking about doing something like that just because I haven't taken the leap into like HX stop or anything, but I would like a just straight plug-in solution.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my Princeton's a little too loud for church.
I'm going to challenge you to give the stomp a try.
Oh, I've tried it. Matter of fact, I borrowed one from a friend for a few months.
Oh,
and, I love it. It's just a different approach. Yeah. And, I think for me, like, I lean so much into just my acoustic sound that to have that is just, it's going a different direction. So I am a
certified, bona fide, verifiable Line 6 fanboy right now.
Mm-hmm.
And incidentally, that was something I was going to say earlier when we were talking about the Jazz Master. I'm going to try to wrap up and stop complaining about it, I promise. But it feels like you could do as much with a Variax. Like, yeah. It feels like you could just buy the Variax that looks like a Strat or like a Les Paul. It looks like a familiar shape. And without even having, I'm pretty sure you can do it without even anything special. You can do it straight from the guitar, get the different sounds. Like, you don't need the Helix. You don't need the any of that kind of stuff. Now, if you have the Helix, welcome to a world that's too many options. But with the Helix, I have the HX Effects. I have the Stomp. I have the Floor. I have a couple of power cabs. When I play acoustic shows now, I take my Helix Floor, my acoustic guitar, a microphone, and the power cabs. The power cabs are my PA.
Yeah, and you sing through that.
And I sing through that. And I plug the microphone into the mic input of the Floor. I've got processing if I want it, reverb, compression, all those EQ, all those things. The acoustic, I get all the things I want. I get a preamp. I get a compression, reverb. And then I just run the power cabs as my mains. And now, since I finally entered the world of having my own in-ear monitoring rig, not an expensive one, but I have one, I just plug my in-ear receiver into the Helix and I monitor through in-ears and I put the power cabs up at the front of the stage, and that's PA.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's an expensive PA.
There's so many simple like ways of doing things that, you know, you have to fill a trunk in the back of your car or SUV or whatever, or a truck to go out and gig. And now it's like, it really makes a lot more sense to just, there's a lot of tools available to make it so much lighter and just efficient and less cabling and setup time. I'm all for that.
Yeah, me too. The easier we can make it, the better. And this hurts my heart, hurts my soul, but the easier it is to control the volume, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong. I just want to turn my super reverbs up to about 7 and both of them in play. But it's really hard to find a place for that anymore.
Yeah. Unless you're in a really loud space that'll let you do it. It's almost so much frowned upon these days.
Yeah. And it breaks my heart because my best gigs, my favorite gigs have been those where we were able to just cut loose. No one put a cap on us for volume. And we didn't abuse that. I've never abused the no cap on volume. It's always safe, musical and in a mix, but it was loud and I could feel it and it was awesome.
Yeah.
Talking recently to folks, I think it was in a Facebook chat we were talking about favorite musical experiences we've ever had. I think we were chatting about that. My favorite musical experience
was in Clarksdale, Mississippi. We set up an impromptu band on the sidewalk in Clarksdale during a blues festival, and we played for 6.5 hours. And we just played loud, had a blast. It was nuts. It was my favorite musical experience of my entire life.
Yeah.
And just because you could feel it, and it attracted people. I don't know. I'm waxing nostalgic about volume. This is ridiculous. I need gigs, dude. I gotta play.
Yeah. I haven't had the opportunity to do that type of gigging in a long time, and I miss it. But even like, I'll tell you this, like when the pandemic hit, you know, and I'm like at church, I would go in and lead for a live stream on Sunday. Like, and it got to where we were uncertain about a lot of things. And it was like, we cut the band loose for about 2 months, and I did it. And at first it was like the first week or so, I was like, this is fun. I got the freedom. I don't have to set up all this stuff for a band. And, you know, it's just so much more free to do that. And then I got to where I was like, I really missed it. Like it was very hard being by yourself. And when we did bring our band back in, finally, that first time we played, it was just like, it hit so hard, like in a spot that you didn't even realize you missed it so much, you know, like playing with a group and having a drummer and a bassist and the rest of the band. And you just take those things for granted sometimes when you do it week in, week out.
100%. Oh, so 2 weekends ago now at this point, when I played this gig and I was out there in the middle of nowhere playing at this camp.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me. So we got there, we sound checked. We're playing through, and of course we'd gotten together and rehearsed these tunes once, but for the most part we'd practiced on our own. And I'm playing, and I realized how much I've played these tunes by myself, because I'm playing like full chords and I'm doing like this kind of stuff. And when like midway through sound check, I'm like, what are you doing? Dude, go back to the stuff you know how to play, where you're not carrying this. There's a rhythm section. There's a rhythm guitar. You know, you don't have to strum these big 5-note chords anymore. You get to play all the flourishes and all the fills and be ambient and let the delay do all the work for you that you can't do when you're sitting by yourself or when you're just strumming an acoustic guitar. I actually had to reteach myself to go back into that role, because it's been over a year since I've done any of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's something like you talk about the nostalgia or whatever, and whatever is, I don't think, you know, I'm trying to come full circle with what we're talking about, but I don't think that some of these things are tangible enough to describe them, but they're a feeling that you carry within you. Like when you experience it in musical moments, it's like I'd sent you a, you had had Ariel Posen on your show, and it made me think of, you know, he played this after party thing in Santa Ana at some golf coffee shop that I went to with some friends, and he was playing in the round with these other guys, and they were just trading off licks, and they were playing that Ray Charles song, I've Got a Woman, and he was just riffing off that, and all of a sudden he goes off into this just blazing slide solo that like everybody just stops, you know, like we're just all chatting, whatever. And everybody stops and pays attention to it. Cause it's just, and there's nothing that like, I could talk about that. And people say, I don't understand. I mean, whatever, like, you know, my best experience was at this such and such concert. Well, to me, it was just like a moment in time where something caught my attention so much, and it had a nostalgia effect to it. And it hit my soul hard, and I'll never forget that. I'm glad I got it on cell phone, you know, where I could, you know, talk about it and remember it. And every time I hear it, I was just like, I remember like the moment I was and what I was doing, you know, same thing with, I don't think I ever talked to you about this one, but I have a Clarksdale experience.
Oh.
Where in college, I was with a college group, and we went up there, like work at a some kind of mission thing. So I wasn't even there to experience the music. And we took a day like going around town, and they had some kind of blues museum. I went into that, checked it out. And they had, you might even know, there was a music store close to that.
Bluestown Music.
Must have been.
Yeah.
And they had a really interesting selection of guitars. It was like a bunch of old Stellas and stuff like that. So I'm going in and I'm playing, and there's this guy, and I don't know what, you know, what his name was or anything, but he was apparently a blonde, and he was playing in some open tune and playing 12 string guitar. And I sat there for probably an hour and just jammed with this guy. Like, didn't even talk with him. He was just playing, and I kind of jumped in, and it almost was like trance like by the time. And there's some people who I was with who weren't into music who came in and like had to kind of like just drag me out of that.
Yeah.
But like it was one of those things that just, an experience that is that you can't replicate if you tried. You know, it's just one of those musical moments. Probably doesn't mean anything to anybody else. But to me, it's like one of those light bulb moments where it's like music makes sense. This is part of my journey, and I'm going to carry this in my playing and how I approach music, you know, forever. And you know, I think, you know, going back full circle, the whole movie thing and whatever, it's just, it's a testament to how it's touching other people, besides yourself. And you can see that and see how it's affecting people, and there's momentum behind it, and it's not just you, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. And there's a whole lot of people going down this road with us. And quick shout to, since while I'm at it, I know he doesn't listen to this, but Ronnie Drew is the owner of Bluestown Music there in Clarksdale. It's very much a used store. I've spent way too much of my time there. Actually, it got to a point where I was just there so often. I never worked there, but Ronnie would just tell me, "Hey, watch the counter. I'm running to the store." So I'd watch the counter. Actually his son Marshall is one of my, so Marshall, the son of the owner, is the guitar player I tell people is the guitar player I want to be when I grow up.
Okay.
The best guitar player I've ever known in my life. He knows, and it's not because he's blazing fast or he plays all these different styles. It's just his phrasing is the closest to perfect I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah.
He has a musical memory and a touch and a tone and just knows the right note at the right time. I can remember sitting with him and listening to music. And first time we listened through an album, he's the guy that turned me on to the Black Crowes. I'd never listened to Black Crowes before that. He got me really into Led Zeppelin, which, you know, I was young ish, but still had never really gotten to Led Zeppelin. He got me into them, but we would sit and listen to a song. And then like an hour later, he would just start playing the songs from that record, like on guitar. And I'm like, I didn't know you knew that song. He said, I don't. He's just playing it. He's just remembered it. He would do gigs where he would just show up at the gig and decide, like acoustic gigs. And he'd be like, I think tonight I'm going to play all of Rubber Soul front to back and just play the entire Beatles album.
Wow.
Or he'd show up and do nothing but a gig of Bob Dylan songs.
Yeah.
Or he just decide, I'm going to do all of Robert Johnson's songs tonight. That's my gig tonight. And he just blew my mind. But Ronnie's shop, I bought way too much gear there. I bought my Super Reverb from there. Actually, my Super Reverb was Marshall's first. And I bought it from them. It's such a cool store. Elvis Costello's bought guitars there. Ed King tried to buy an amp there. Tried to buy an amp that was not for sale.
See, I have a feeling. I mean, it probably goes way deeper and broader than we realize. But I mean, even like a guy like me who didn't even know the name of the store can have a magical experience there. Imagine like if you're in and out of there all the time.
Yeah.
Just
I got to see some really cool things in that store. John Krasinski came through there. I don't know if that counts as a magical music experience.
Okay.
He came through there at one point. I don't know. Anyway, I could again, waxing nostalgic about, you know, childhood haunts. And but Ronnie's still there. He's still doing it. There's a ton of gear there. So if you're in Clarksdale, I mean, go buy Ronnie's. Buy some musical gear.
Yeah, go check it out.
The Stellas and the Harmony guitars, that's sort of like his specialty. He buys them usually beat up. He gets them playable, and he sells them. And that's what he does. It's fantastic. So we're running pretty late. I think we've covered a ton. I hope, you know, if you don't like what I said about the Jazz Master, I mean, okay. I mean, Pedal Movie, if you didn't like the Pedal the Musical, maybe you'll like the Pedal Movie. Maybe that'll be more your speed. If you don't like musicals, I don't know what to tell y'all. I get such a kick out of watching people lose it over things that don't matter.
And yes,
it's becoming my favorite pastime. Watching people lose it over things that just don't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's part of, I think a lot of that's, we don't have a lot else going on that can occupy our minds.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Idle minds and, yeah, and hands and all those things. But having said all that, Clifton, I sure appreciate you hanging out with me and talking.
Absolutely. Anytime. I enjoy it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, of course. And, so for the rest of y'all listening and watching,
just the watching.
It's the watching. It's new band name. Called it. So for those of you listening and watching, sure appreciate you hanging out with us and listening to us ramble on and wax nostalgic and talk about gear and culture and getting mad at people who get mad at things. That's what I do best. Get mad at people who get mad at things. Be sure, find us on Facebook, find us on Instagram, Instagram.com, Facebook.com/40wattpodcast. You can email the podcast at 40wattpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Patreon, and I sure hope you do. Hope you support the podcast for as little as $3 a month. It's our low wattage tier. Yes, I went there. There's a couple of higher tiers. I should have some merch in soon. Got some stickers coming that I'm going to start sending out to Patreon supporters. I do have a Teespring store that I'm going to put down in the comments below. If you want a t-shirt, if you want a coffee mug, I may have baby onesies in there. I don't know. I don't know if I did them. I'd started to at one point, but if you want your kid to wear a 40 watt podcast logo, I mean, we can do it. I have a t-shirt that says buy vinyl because streaming doesn't pay shit. It's my new favorite t-shirt. So check it out. If you're on YouTube, hit like or subscribe, thumbs up, not like, that's right. Thumbs up the video, hit subscribe, hit the bell icon. I won't flood your notifications. I promise. Maybe two videos a week at most. That's enough. That's enough self-selling. Go check it out. Look at the links below. You'll find Clifton's channel down below. I'm going to put his TikTok down there. So follow Clifton on TikTok. I guess I'll put mine in there too. I mean, I don't put anything up on TikTok, but whatever. All of the things for Clifton and all of the things for me are going to be down in the comments below. I keep pointing down, not that it matters, especially for podcast listeners. You can't even see. So click all the things, follow all the things, like all the things. And until next time, take some time for yourself. Be kind to each other. Stop getting angry for no reason. And make a little bit of noise. We'll talk to y'all next time.
This episode is brought to you by the supporters of 40 Watt Podcast over on Patreon. Go over to patreon.com/40wattpodcast, where for as little as $3 per month, you can help support the podcast and get every episode ad-free. For $5 a month, you'll get every episode ad-free, as well as a bonus episode every week. I can't overstate how thankful I am for the support of my patrons, and hope you'll consider joining the team and helping keep this show on the road.